también. Allow you to introduce yourself and then make your presentation. I don't know if the screens are working. I noticed that in the comments in previous meeting that we had, they were not working. I don't know if you have a PowerPoint presentation or you have a copy here. Okay. Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. Chairperson, thank you for the welcoming and for the introduction previously. What I do on Thursday nights, Chairperson, is between myself and Guguletu. Thank you, Chairperson. Oh, okay, okay. Now I've exposed myself. Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Chair. We request that that's off the record. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I have the honor of introducing Nazir Osman. I call him Uncle Nazir, somebody who... Firstly, my name is Bram Hanokom. I do some work with Broadway Suites in their various corporate social investment work that they do, as well as some of their exploratory work. They're looking at a lot of different projects that they do. I could have been at the office there with me. So mine is just to introduce Uncle Nazir. I'm here to show him my support and to be part of Broadway in this submission, and to just outline that Uncle Nazir is the founding member of Broadway Suites. They now employ over 500 people. They have quite a few products, but their most known one is Tumbo Lollipops. They started off with a bucky as a small family business where he and his family were the only employees, and they used a bucky. If I remember correctly, the story I've been told, Uncle Nazir, is that Willard's Simba chips would sell chips in a box of 48 or something, and they went and they took that 48 and sold boxes of 12, and they used mixed the flavors and sold to local tuck shops. That's the kind of grassroots nature of how their business developed. Currently, they employ over 500 people, and they have two factories, and they produce a very large number of sweets and lollipops, and they even export, obviously helping bring foreign currency into the country. And then, if I may say so as well, they have been incredibly supportive. The nature of their kind of philanthropy is they do not tell anyone, so I can't talk too much about the details, but they have been extremely supportive, as many of us in this room may be aware anyway. So that's why I'm here to motivate that Uncle Nazir is here to represent truly a South African business, a South African-owned business, and a business which has difficulties in the sector. So on that introduction, maybe I could hand over to Uncle Nazir. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. In the ANC, we call your father Chawe, so we also refer to yourself as Chawe. I'm going to... Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members, the reason I'm here is because our business and many businesses like ours that are in this economy are struggling to survive because of bullying and dominance by a very few small, a few players that we believe have got too much power in this economy. So I read the bill and I noticed that anyone over 15% ownership of a sector is regarded as dominant, which I think is a flaw, and I think it needs to be changed, because we have five big major chain stores in South Africa, and none of them claim to have over 15%, but they are dominant. So I think the definition of dominant for me is a little bit difficult to grasp, because when I say dominant, I'm referring to Pick and Pay Checkers and the Big Five generally. They are known as the Big Five here. Now, our concern is that our businesses cannot grow because of the practices of these big businesses. The way they operate, they have rules that make it impossible for a small business to be able to become a supplier. And I'm speaking not just for myself, but hundreds of small businesses, or thousands. Now, for example, we were supplying in one of the local townships in Benoni to about 500 little hawkers. We used to supply them directly with sweets. And suddenly, one day, a checkers opened in there, a Shoprite opened in the township. All 500 out of business. I'm giving you a real-life example. It's not theory. Now, they're not going to provide 500 jobs in their checkers. They're not going to be able to keep 500 people feeling independent and earning their own living and maintaining their dignity. These people are now out in the street and they've got to go look for a job somewhere, and we all know how difficult it is to find a job these days. Now, when you build a church in a place, they do a traffic impact study. They find out whether there's enough parking available, they find out whether how it's going to affect this particular community and so on. I'm just wondering if there's any such equivalent when you open, when you grant a license for a chain store to go into a township. Is it measured in economic terms? Is there any measure of what's going to happen to all of these small businesses? Because it really has a debilitating effect on that entire community, because you turn it from an entrepreneur, we talk about entrepreneurship and so on, but you take an entrepreneurial community and you turn them into slaves overnight, because suddenly they cannot compete with the chain stores. Now, these chain stores have got so much power because they've got old established relationships which were established in the apartheid era already and prior. They've got international connections which the average person doesn't have. They've got buying power to negotiate the best pricing. And they just got like everything in their favor. So we think that, how is this going to change? Is there some way that we can approach government to create fairer competition for people? You know, when people play golf, they have a handicap. So if you're a weaker golfer, you've got a higher handicap, so you can compete on an even level with an experienced person. Now, here there's no such thing. Here you go in, it's fair competition. The minute 1994 came, we were told, hey, stop complaining. The playing fields are equal now. Now, how is the playing field equal when you grew up in a township and your mom was a domestic servant somewhere and your dad worked in a mine somewhere, and now suddenly you're competing with this person who comes from a corporate background with a privileged education and all of that? I'm sure most of these things that I'm saying are things that you all know very well, but I just have to put on record that this is our position. So I'm a member of a Congress of Business and Economics that has about 500 members and affiliates, and the feeling is, and I was told to represent quite a few little businesses, but five little businesses that I'm actually talking on behalf of that have the same issues said to me, please don't mention our name. So on the one hand you say, but you've got to stand up for what you believe in, say who you are, say what your problem is. But these people have got a little bit of business with the chain stores and they know they're going to be victimized. Now, the way they victimize you is nobody tells you why. In the past days they put a sign saying whites only, so you knew why. Now they just say, it's okay, I'll come back to you. Finish. You're out of the loop. So they support established business. The business is still done very much on a race basis. Business is still done very much on the big businesses that have got established relationships. For example, Tiger Brands has got 500 products to supply to a chain store. So they negotiate right at the top, and all of their products get visible on the shelves. So you get a small sweet maker like us, and we go in there, and they say to us, oh, you've got lollipops. Well, we've got Beacon Lollipops, which is from Tiger Brands. You've got these little hard sweets. Oh, we've already got that from Beacon. Beacon also makes little hard sweets. So we don't need another one. So you're basically excluded. Now, it's the problem is that when I was thinking about this, I was thinking that they're going to say, but it's a free enterprise, so we can buy from who we want to. We're saying that it is only free, you only call it free enterprise because you are in charge, you are in control of the economy. So it's free enterprise, it suits you. The poor person that's trying to make a living, standing at the table at a station, whether it's hot or cold or rainy, selling one little sweet at a time, go tell him that it's a free economy and there's a free competition. It's really not fair. It's really, and I don't know how to deal with that question. In terms of our own experience, when you go to these chain stores, they have certain rules, and I'm going to just explain some of these rules and how unfair they are. One of these is the rebate system. So the rebate system is not fair and transparent and open. It's a confidential, it's called a confidential rebate. So you go to a chain store and the guy says, okay, what percentage rebate are you going to give us? So firstly, they want the best price. So you give them the best price, which you give to everyone else. Then they want up to 13 or 15% rebate on top of that. If you don't give it, you're out. And then you speak to a Tiger Brands rep and he tells you confidentially, listen, we give them a 5% rebate. And then you wonder, how come I'm getting charged 13% and they're getting 5%? And then you get told it's confidential. So now I go to each one of you individually and I tell you a secret. But each one of you can only talk to me because you swear to confidentiality. But actually, it's the same thing everybody else does. So what they do is they say confidential rebate. You sign a confidentiality agreement. So nobody knows what the other people pay. Somehow news has leaked. People have jumped ship. People have moved from one company to another. But you can't prove it and they don't disclose it. They refuse to disclose what other people, what rebates they get. So the whole rebate system is totally unfair. Then another thing that they've introduced called margin degradation. I'm not sure if any of you ever read such a phrase. Margin degradation is, we go to them and we say, we're going to charge you 20 rand a packet. They say, good, we're going to sell it at 30 rand a packet. That's not our business what you sell it. But you sign an agreement with them that they're going to sell it at 30 rand a packet. And then the hidden clause there is margin degradation. If for any reason they're forced to sell at 25 rand, we have to refund them the 5 rand that they lost because they lost the margin. So when you sell them goods, you're going to promise them a margin. Now, this is totally unfair. It's an unheard of practice. But they can do it here because they abuse the fact that there's no law against it. They cannot do something like this in many other countries. So margin degradation, I think, is one of the most unfair practices in business. So if I control the market and you want to get into my store, I expect you to guarantee me my profit margins. Now, nobody can guarantee your profit margin. The economy changes, prices changes, new products come in, competition. But they force you into this kind of relationship. And if you don't agree, then they just don't stock your product. And when they don't stock your product, they don't need to give an excuse. They just tell you, you still got stock, or there's a new competitor, is much cheaper than you, what are you going to do? So if you go to a big business, there's many, many, many ways out for them, and you really can't fight the system. So I'm appealing to you, please, to help small businesses find a way through some or the other method or in law that can prohibit them from abusing their power. So we have made a submission to the portfolio committee during the public hearings in August, and we discussed a lot of the ways in which the dominant firms make it hard for small businesses to participate in the market. Now, I'm just going to mention one or two of the other things. Shelf space. Now, when you own a shop, right, if you own a shop, you pay rental for your space. Now, they expect every supplier to buy shelf space. So you actually subsidize their rental. Now you give them a rental, you subsidize the rental by buying shelf space at an exorbitant fee, and then you still pay them advertising allowances, and then you still pay them rebates, and then you still take a risk of their return policies, which are quite unfair. Then you have to pay for signage in their stores. They give you unfavorable payment terms. After you've done all this, you realize that you're paying for their business, and then they still want you to guarantee their margin. So all of these are, in my understanding, very unfair practices, and small businesses cannot survive against onslaught of big businesses when they want to abuse their power in such a way. So we as our business at Broadway Suites, we've chosen not to deal with large retailers. We could afford to do that simply because we could survive in the informal market, supplying directly to smaller hawkers and so on. But many other businesses can't survive because if you're making a particular kind of product that needs to be on the shelf of the top end stores, you need to be there. And if you're not there, your business just dies. There are five manufacturers of such products that have asked me to state this case, which is very similar to our case, on their behalf, because they actually feel that they'll be victimized. And their fear is real because there's so much power in the hands of a small number of powerful business people that they can't even do anything about it. So we're just hoping that some of these pearls, like I just want to refer to one or two of them. The relevant, I'll read just read this, the relevant sections of the bill include 8(4), which specifically says that it is prohibited for a dominant firm to impose on or require from its suppliers unfair prices or other trading conditions. Now, the problem is, when they do impose these things, nobody does anything about it, and nobody can do anything about it because, first of all, a business like ours cannot fight Pick and Pay and their lawyers. They've got huge legal firms with huge budgets to be able to fight. So we're not even going to take a chance. Secondly, they'll boycott your products. They won't buy from you. Although the bill says it's prohibited for them to impose unfair practices, there is no prosecution of directors or people who are guilty of unfair practices. So even if you catch them and even if you catch them out, they say, okay, we'll correct it. And then they find another way to penalize you. But they found guilty, but nobody gets prosecuted. In the bread price fixing scandal, all Pioneer Foods, Tiger Brands, and Premier, all they did was, after they paid R1 billion fine imposed by the Competition Commission, which we thought was one of the best things that happened in this country, after that, they just raised the bread price. And with impunity, they raised the bread price, and they all raised the bread price together, and the consumer just had to pay. So nobody takes responsibility. So we say what we'd like to see in law is that the people responsible must be prosecuted personally and criminally, because the Tiger Brands directors that did all of that, and the Tiger Brands Premier and Pioneer Foods directors that did that, they paid the fine from the company. Nothing happened to them. They're still earning their salaries. They're still having the same kind of lifestyle. They were not prosecuted. So one of the things is that if people are not taking personal responsibility and they don't get personally prosecuted, they're never going to stop this practice. Okay, I just want to go on to one more thing. the high level of economic concentration. Now, I know that you can't do anything, nobody can do anything in our capitalist economy when somebody is dominating. And we sometimes find ourselves at the crossroads as a business saying that You know, in 1988, I went to Taiwan. I was at that time in a different business, and I went into an electronics factory, and I saw a woman sitting at a table, like I'm sitting here now, and a belt just moves in front of her, and all she had to do is each time this thing came past, she had to press one little button, so a piece of it, a transistor would be soldered onto the circuit board. And the next one came, she pressed a button. The next one came, she pressed a button. And I stood there for a while and I thought, how dehumanizing for a person to be trapped for 8 or I don't know how many hours a day just doing that. And I thought, this is really terrible. I really hated that moment. Today, we have 500 employees. We have machine operators who are doing almost the same thing. And I don't know how to deal with this contradiction, but they're so thankful they have a job. So in a way, the economy, the real economy, the way the world works, the way the real, all the nice thoughts and all the nice things that people say about creating jobs, when you convert it into real action, it's very exploitative. And it dehumanizes people. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to solve, or we're going to boil the ocean today. We're not going to solve everything now. But we really need some help from government. We need this competition bill to do something, in some way to criminalize this behavior of the dominant forces in our economy. And so I appeal to you that if there's any way that something can be done, it needs to be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to add the fact that Uncle Nazir and Broadway Suites are also active in civil society, active in the environment. They're human beings, just like every business person or individual would be. In labor, we do have unions that get together and they negotiate on behalf of workers, because it was accepted by us in South Africa and most progressive forces that the dominant forces and the dominance and power dynamics of a employer and employee does not equate to equality. We have a similar situation now with the dominant retailers and wholesalers. They have too much power over the small upcoming and manufacturers and service providers, where they're not able to negotiate a deal. In fact, the deal sometimes is not feasible. So when we see the number of small, medium manufacturers in South Africa making a variety of products, strangely, when you go to Pick n Pay, ShopRite, all these stores, we only see the Tiger brands, we only see the very big brands, because for the small companies, not that they don't want the business, I mean, the very fact that his company makes millions of lollipops almost every day, but we don't see them in Pick n Pay, ShopRite, Checkers, and so on, is an indication that the deal just couldn't be worth it. They couldn't get a deal that was worth the time and effort it took. So I guess in a way, what this bill hopefully aims to achieve and why Broadway Suites are supporting it is to give tools and legal remedies to try to level the playing field somewhat, such that they can demand a fair price and not just put their arms up. And there's another person we know from another company whom I won't want to mention the name of, who we also know. This particular company took a advertising space and put it up for solidarity for the Palestinian people. Subsequent to that, one of the retailers took all his stock and put it on two shelves and allowed it to rot and never ordered again, a huge retailer. Where are the remedies for such thing, and how does one even prove that there's a direct link between those things? So the power dynamic of the dominant forces is just too much, and hopefully the submission of Broadway Suites to really give teeth and strengthen the small, medium enterprises who come from a more progressive background, who seem to care, some of them, or a lot of them, about empowering the people, and they themselves are an example. I mean, the example of Uncle Nazir and their companies is a rarity, unfortunately, and I think we need to encourage our government to support this. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Charlie and Uncle Nadia. You don't mind if I call it Charlie. This is the Aleppo. Now, at this stage, we will allow members to ask questions. But also to just to update members, I just conducted the Matthew Parks because Naled is a research arm of COSATU. So I think we're succeeding. The Naled person is here at the visitor center, so she'll be able to be here. And Mr. Flock from SAP2 will be here by 1 o'clock as well. So, yeah, so we've been able to address that challenge. Over to you, members. Honorable Makue, Honorable Makwehu, and then Honorable Terry, in that order.
Chairperson, let me appreciate the angle that Nazir Osman is putting to us. The question that I would have is really one. To what extent do you have an association of these SMEs in the particular area? Point two is that we appreciate the references, the four references to the bill that is being made here. But it would be helpful if you or either Bram can say to us what is missing in the bill. I hear you saying that there are no consequences for the directors of companies. It would be helpful if you could sharpen certain elements of what we are trying to achieve here. That's the second one. The third one would be whether, what is your experience with the structures of government, like the Department of Small Business Development, as well as the Department of Trade and Industry, in helping you as a business person to promote your products. Then my final question, Chair, would be to say that it's more than a comment, but I'm posing it to you as a question in the sense that we don't want to impose, but would want to hear what you think of the idea of getting the appropriate person from the Portfolio Committee in the Gauteng Legislature to meet with you and some other business people to look at some of the practicalities related to the difficulties that you're having on the ground there. Are you open to such an engagement? Thank you, Chair.
Just take the questions and then you'll respond to all of them at once. Honorable Makwebu.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you, sir, for your presentation. Just want to refer to your presentation before us, page 2, the second paragraph, wherein you submit that the provisions which shift the onus to dominant firms are also important in addressing your concerns. Now, let's pause and talk about that, because you make reference to section 8.2 of the amendment, the proposed amendment. Now, for you to be able to get the benefit of this shift where the burden of proof now rests with the big firms, you need to access the Competition Commission and the tribunal where the need arises. Now, I just want to find out, because in the third paragraph, you also submit that you hope, that is the third line on the third paragraph, we hope that the commission will be appropriately funded and capacitated to ensure that they're able to fulfill this important function. Now, again, on that one, I want to find out, because we have earlier indicated that
you know, these big firms have got a big budget for, you know, litigation, and you small businesses do not have. So the Competition Commission becomes critical, isn't it? Now, it's one thing to have these structures, the Competition Commission, the tribunal, but I want to find out the value proposition to you as a small business. Are you able to access them where you pick up the unfair practices of small businesses? Not really having to go to you to find lawyers, but to go and knock in their offices and say, look, we want you guys to look at these practices because in our view, we deem them as unfair practices. Because that's the only way you could be able to get justice out of this matter. So my question is, the accessibility of these commissions, and if so, are you happy, if you are able to access them, are you happy with the service you're getting from them? If they are not accessible, we would want to know that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Now we'll Kat.
Thank you, Chair. You know what Bram and Uncle has done today was to crystallize what we have said over a period of time. Highly monopolized economy with oligarchies running amok over the economy. I was listening, and this is a passionate plea, Uncle and Bram. I was listening to another young black businessman in the construction sector saying, I want to have market penetration, but big monopolized companies are closing me off. They started by saying to the cement manufacturing companies that if you give this young black person the cement that he needs to build a particular mall in whatever city in the country, we are not going to buy cement from you. They went to the people who were renting their own malls and said, if you're going to be a potential renter in the mall built by this person, we are not going to give you a renting space in our malls. They went to a particular point where a young black person trying to have market penetration had to literally buy a stake in a cement manufacturing company and have a clause that says, you support me first with cement before you can give it, just so that he can safeguard the delivery of the mall on time, because penalties are much heavy. In fact, they were going to take him off the business if that closure was going to be successful. This is a classical example of what I was listening to, comparing it with what you are saying today. In fact, you are saying to us, this closure is so desperately against you that even your markups are being eroded by these people. So how are you supposed to be surviving if your own markups cannot be able to be sustain your business? You are going to a business to say, this is what I can offer, and the person imposes penalties upon you even before they can sell. So I can talk for 2 hours or so about the issues that, but I think Braedi has captured what I wanted to say, you have stopped short. You've made a vivid plea for intervention on our part, but you have stopped short to say, what are these practical measures in the bill that you would want to see happening? One, you are raising consequence management, which we know that it is absent. But what modalities do you want us to implement in the bill? So that consequence management is there. But like you are saying, you are not also here against smaller boys. You are here against people who have financial money, whether in whatever form of resources. They can take you through litigation process, they can take you through whatever form, and they will beat you. The process is, we must be able to give you the teeth in terms of the legislative instrument to be able to be responsive. So what is it, Angel, that you would sit in there think that if the bill can be able to have these measures, I think we can be able to be sustainable as small business. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I just check the lady that is just joined up? Are you from Nalini?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay. Can we have responses?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I'm going to try to answer this as best as possible, and I say I don't have all the answers. if I can just start with the first one, our connection to SMEs, we deal directly with about 20,000 small workers. We give them a certain amount of ongoing education. We teach them about profit markups, percentages, and we have ongoing lessons. But we only take 30 at a time because it's impossible. We don't have the resources and the means, and we're not national. Most of our work is done in Gauteng and a little bit in KZN. But we do send them SMSs which are about promotions, about our products, and we give them a certain amount of tips, but in very simple language because you're limited to 140 letters on an SMS. And many of them are not, don't have phones, they can use WhatsApp or other, they don't have the means, so we can't actually send them. They don't all have emails, many are rural. So we send them through, and some of it are in different languages. But even that is a bit of a challenge for us because we just use our internal staff to do that. We don't actually have the means to hire professional people to do that properly. But it's in the region of 20,000 somewhat small hawkers and small retailers and what you call duck shops. Okay, in terms of the second question, criminalizing the actions, we think that it's, I don't know, maybe I don't understand the law, but to me it sounds quite simple, that the people at Tiger Brains, they were not criminalized personally. And I just think that there is evidence that they were found guilty and they were fined. So somewhere in there, there should be evidence of people who are responsible for the actual action. You know, and that will also talk to the later one about the onus on the dominant firms, which is another question that I'll come to just now. I think the two are sort of interconnected. But just excuse my ignorance, because I don't really know the law, but I think that there should be some way that should be found, and maybe which we don't know how to do it. We just are appealing. Maybe you can use your legal people to do that. Okay. Then, in terms of the DGI, CIFA, IDC, all of those organizations that are supporting small business, I think that they still need to do a lot more. I think that there's too many small businesses who get turned away from getting finance because they don't have a proper business plan. Okay. members, I also serve on the board of CIFA, so I know for a fact that a lot of small businesses, because of their lack of education in the past, because of their lack of resources, they don't know how to do a business plan. So sometimes they go to an accountant and he charges them some money and they come up with something that's not connected to their business. That business plan was for the previous person, you know, and they come with it. So they don't have that. So organizations like CIFA and CIDAR, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, need to work together more closely so that they can upskill people to be able to at least present the case. So they don't get the finance. I'm not sure if I understood the question properly, but I do know that there is definitely a lapse in that department. Now, from the IDC's point of view, in terms of bigger businesses that want bigger amounts, I think that those people are resourced adequately, and IDC has helped. Lots of businesses I know, we've got an IDC loan, which was a great help to us as well, you know, to grow our business, where we took our employees from 200, and we promised the IDC we would get up to 300, and eventually moved up to 500. So these interventions from government have proven to be working. On the fourth question about meeting the portfolio committee members, we are very, very, very amenable to that. We think it's a great idea because that way we can, on a one-to-one, if they're at our premises and they see the real conditions, meet our workers, meet some of our marketing people and other people in it, they can actually understand how in practice this happens and why and what measures may be able to be taken, because I don't think that in a forum like this we'd be able to have all the answers in their completeness that we would like to do. On the onus to the dominant firms, which is the second paragraph, the provisions which shift the onus to the dominant firms are also important in addressing our concerns. This is in clause 8.2 with respect to the abuse of dominance and with respect to price discrimination. When we say that we want the onus to shift to them, right, basically what happens is that the small business can't actually prove and really doesn't have the capacity to argue the case fairly. So we're just saying that we think that they should prove that they've been fair. That, you know, I'm just explaining it in a simple way that I understand it, that they should be told, you prove to us that you've been fair to these businesses. And so that's what I understood when you said that the owners must shift to the dominant firms to prove that they've been fair and that they are actually, they must account to government like how you account to the taxman when, you know, they want to see your figures, you've got to show. They must be in the same way that you have your any other report to a government department, or if you take funds, you account to the Reserve Bank if it's to do with any kind of aspect. So we just think that there should be some laws in place that force them on a regular basis, you know, like the employment equity policy called, you know, they need to account and they need to show that they're being fair, because at the moment they can do as they please and the small firm can only complain like we see this as a very valuable opportunity for us to come and lay our complaints. So one of the examples is the cement business that was mentioned by members from the back, that the way they close your doors. Now they should be forced to explain why they're doing that, and they should be forced to actually show that they've helped business, small businesses, to do the opposite of what they're actually doing now. Chair, I'm not sure if I'm answering the questions fully, but I'm quite open to reopen any of these again. I'm just doing my best to try to answer the questions. Okay, number 6, on the Competition Commission to be funded. I don't know, because I've never done a complaint to the Competition Commission, so I don't know firsthand, but I know in my mind how it should be. It should be like a police station where you go lay a charge, and the state takes on the cost of the case, not the small business, because the small business is not going to be able to afford to fight. So that's just in simple terms the way I understand it should be, but I don't know what it's like at the moment. Okay, the 7th question, which is the most difficult one for me, is the practical measures and the modalities. I actually do know that some of the laws that are passed will easily be bypassed by a chain store owner or what's the name, because they will just say, for example, they'll say, if you're supplying them with snack foods, they'll say, okay, we've got 100 meters out of our 10,000 square meter store. 100 meters running space is for snacks. Out of the 100 square meters, we give 50 meters to Samba because they're the market leaders. And we give 20 meters to Wallace. So we've only got 30 square meters left, and we give it to 10 small store owners that take 3 meters each. And then they shut out the rest. But they don't even do that. They don't account anything to anyone. So I think there should be some form of measure where they have to actually show what they're doing. They must actually be forced to show that they do support small business. Because when these big stores give an organization, one day they gave a blind school in our area a check of 10,000 rand. And you saw Pick and Pay giving the 10,000 rand amount over. And I spoke to the newspaper, because we also advertise in the paper, and she told me they spent 100,000 rand advertising that. They gave 10,000 rand. So what they do is they do small things, but they make a big noise about it. But they don't really do the real thing. The real thing, they do the opposite. When it comes to actually helping the small business or the small organization, they really don't do much. If they give it to you, they want, they've got conditions. They've got lots of preconditions. They would blow their own trumpet more than what it's you, you know. So in the same way, I think that in terms of practical measures, I think that if we do go back to meeting them, we would be able to iron out and arrive at some practical measures. But right now, I don't know how to answer it. Thank you.
Should I? Yeah. So, honourable members, firstly, I'm not sure procedurally whether we get to speak again. So firstly, I want to say it's heartwarming to be here, you know, to hear the different inputs, and one really does feel we're moving forward. I mean, when real issues can be confronted and collectively with stakeholders, one can discuss and deliberate how to challenge a system that is inherently unfair. It's a typical David Goliath scenario, and I think the legislature is looking at trying to just give the stone that David might need to utilize, because without even a stone, what would David have then done? So this legislature now is looking at various ways to confront the injustices that exist. I think one thing that Broadway Suites needs to make clear is that the company has capacity. The company delivers. The company weathers the tough times. The company produces a product they believe very strongly, particularly the Stumbo product. They believe it's the best product in the market. And they've got reason to believe it, because without supplying those major retailers, they've been able to create employment of over 500 employees, and they're producing, if I may give an estimate, of over 2 million lollipops a day are being made by this company. They're big in their own right, and yet they've been ignored by the major retailers, not for lack of trying, but because of the restrictive measures put in place and that tendency of the big boys club. I often think of this as being an example of the rugby team, where we now definitely, beyond any doubt, can say we do have extremely strong, capable black rugby players. Why is it that the black rugby players were not being selected? And there has been a shift. There have been changes in the rugby team. But that's rugby. And yes, there's an economy of rugby. Yes, rugby players, when you play the Springboks, you get a bigger income. But it's not even, I think, comparable to how the old regime or the old guard have held strongly some of the economic structures. The big players in the economy, I think, have been even more brutal. And I think that if we were to look at the retailers and were to line up the CEOs and the ownership of all the manufacturers that provide your pick-and-pay checkers and so on, we would see an even much more dismal picture than the rugby selection team. And then one has to look and delve into the question, why, when a manufacturer has proven to be capable, that this manufacturer exports to Nigeria, to Zambia, around the world, and is able to get into foreign markets and bring foreign currency into South Africa as an exporter, but is being ignored by our local retailers, despite their efforts, then we know there's a problem. Then moving towards fixing the problem, this this bill that's before you provides some of the teeth necessary. Is it perfect? I don't think it is. Have there been inputs to try and make it stronger? Absolutely. Do you, as honourable members, have the capacity to make it as strong as we'd like it to be? Maybe not, because there are realities with which we operate. But I think that the input of Broadway Suites is to support the bill, to really motivate that it goes forward, and that some of the written inputs that have been made be considered. And I think that there's definitely a will from members who've expressed it, that the bill mustn't just be rhetoric, mustn't just be for show, but must have mechanisms that can empower manufacturers like Uncle Nazir's company to say, but hang on a minute, this is not fair. I'm capable. I'm a player on the field, and I'm good enough to play at that level. Give me a chance. Give me the space. And the mechanisms of how to do it would have to be figured out, and would be quite unique probably to each sector. I mean, the mention of the cement and the malls and so on, it's that kind of thing. How do you confront that kind of resistance? Because which company in their right mind is going to say to an old neutral or to a big developer, no, it's okay, we accept that that you're not going to rent out to us, so we'll go with the small company. It destroys competition, and yet it's hidden and protected under the auspices of free market, when in reality we all know it's monopoly that's reinventing itself to keep the power that be in the same corner. So, chairperson, honourable members, from my side, thank you so much. We really are honoured to be here, and I hope we've answered some of the questions raised. Again, also to Uncle Nazir for sharing his story. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Broadway Suites, for coming and make your presentation. In terms of the process now, that the Community Development Department is going to respond to all the submissions. There are written submissions, but some stakeholders opted not to come and present them orally. But still, the department will respond to those submissions, but also will be responding to your submission as well. But then there will be time when then the committee will deliberate on the submissions as well as the responses of the department, and decide on the way forward with regard to the bill. So that is going to be the process. Thank you very much for coming. You'll hear as the process moves. Unfortunately, I'm not going to allow you now. Already we're running behind schedule, about 15 minutes behind schedule. But all I can do is just to thank you for coming and making the presentation. We'll take everything that you've raised into consideration when we deliberate and process this bill. Thank you very much. Naledi, you can prepare yourself. I don't know if you have a PowerPoint presentation. You do have a PowerPoint presentation. Can you ask us to the volunteer?
What you can do,
we also appreciate that in the context of South Africa being
highly unequal, and we also had challenges of economic exclusion with high levels of concentration, which have a racial context, or you'd be able to see it in terms of racial configuration. We see the bill as being positive because it wants to address some of those key issues. And when we want to understand how this bill is going to be able to do this, it needs to be seen with that particular lens. We also recognize that there are a small number of large firms that dominate most of the sectors in South Africa, and this remains one of the key challenges for us in South Africa, and hopefully the bill will start to unpack some of those challenges and address it. So as such, when we look at the bill in its entirety, we fully endorse the fact that the main focus of the bill is on economic transformation, and that the amendments provide an extension of the mandate of the Competition Authority and the executive to help open up the economy to new entrepreneurs, job creation and investment, through addressing high levels of economic concentration, limited transformation in the South African economy, and most importantly, to actually safeguard against or to prevent the abuse of market power by dominant firms. Naledi also welcomes that the bill acknowledges the need for all role players to be given due consideration, and is also inherently inclusive in what has been and continues to be a highly contested terrain, or an exclusive space, meaning that there's monopoly capital and it's dominated by certain companies. For Labour, this is exceptionally positive. We acknowledge that while South Africa has finally included the public interest as key to the competition legislation, it is not the first country to do so, and there's a lot of practical examples and good practices out there that we should be incorporating. And it's by no means a unique attempt on the part of South Africa, but it would be useful for us to draw the lessons. I think, furthermore, a very positive example is that it has major implications for workers and civil society, and these are carried into the bill. And I think particularly if one looks at the example of Walmart, so the issues around mergers and acquisitions, the Walmart case, when there was an example of merger, or Walmart wanting to merge, one of the key considerations that was given is what would be the consequences for workers in that situation, and when it was found that the merger was not going to be in the public interest, or then it would have greater negative consequences if the merger did not go ahead. For us as Labour, this is obviously a great sense of job security. It gives us a certain degree of certainty in terms of who the employer is. But more importantly, if the merger is found wanting, so I think there was some discussion before I came into the room, but in an instance where a merger has taken place and there's some information given to the Competition Authority to indicate that, in fact, the merger has actually had negative consequences, the bill now gives or is advocating for that particular decision to actually be overturned. This we see as positive. We greatly welcome it as workers and as labour, because in general, when there's mergers and acquisitions, it's usually labour that actually suffers the cost, and we come as collateral damage. So we're really positive about this positive aspect. We also share the sentiments in the Kasatis submission, and we'd like to echo the appreciation by many others who've made submissions to the Competition Commission and also to this committee with regards to the new amendments, and we agree that it actually gives the Competition Commission more teeth, but we do feel that it can actually become a lot stronger. So while it's been positive, there are aspects of the bill that can be strengthened in order to make this possible. We also believe that if you take the track record of the Competition Commission, it has the competency as well as the capability. In many instances, it wasn't given the necessary space or the room to be able to actually do the enforcement, and the bill starts to speak to that quite considerably. I think we also have to be mindful of the fact that South Africa is not working in isolation, that we were in a global context. So, and most countries in the world are pursuing liberal international trade regimes, and which means that there's a particular impact for local producers, who have to be the best in their class if they want to be competitive. And they also have to be quality-wise, and therefore when we put in a bill that's supposed to be supporting our local businesses or domestic businesses, we must ensure that it is not uncompetitive, or we're not making them uncompetitive. So there has to be a balance between what we want to achieve in South Africa vis-a-vis what we want to achieve internationally, noting the international context. We also know that liberalization increases centralization and concentration of markets as firms need to have enough fat to withstand the downturn in the market. So when our firms domestically are being impacted by forces externally, we must make sure that they have the necessary collateral to be able to sustain it, otherwise we wipe our own firms out. The competition policy is also necessary to open local markets to BEE entrants, and it should be borne in mind that markets have their own dynamics, and therefore a sector-specific approach should be taken. Historically, BEE was excluded from the competition policy on the basis that it would make for bad law, but in actual fact, this is a misnomer, and we're quite positive that it's now been included. There are also numerous advantages to pursuing a competition policy to promote economic development, with the main international one being the competition policy, that competition policy is not disciplined by international agreements that South Africa is a party to. So sometimes people will say, you know, because we have international law, we're not able to change our domestic policies because we have to worry about international law. We should actually know that international agreements, which South Africa is party to, does not necessarily impact the way in which domestic companies operate within South Africa. In terms of economic inclusion, the results from a study conducted by the Commission on 2,150 mergers between the period 2009 and 2016, using the statutory presumption threshold requirement of 45% market share, which constituted 10% of the GDP. The study found that 294 firms in the defined market in 31, so it found that 294 firms in the defined market in 31 sectors, that's what they found, 70% of the sectors had dominant firms with defined products. As for the standards index, the nine sectors were highly concentrated with an index score of more than 2,500. So I think the key issue here was in terms of the dominance and the fact that the openness for competition was limited or for new entries. The study further indicated that the issue of market concentration would be addressed structurally, and had there been a different way in which the market was structured, we could have had the potential to 400,000 new jobs being created. But because competition was actually, because dominant firms were actually kept, were able to dominate the market, it actually reduced the opportunity for new firms, for new jobs, and as a result, had a negative impact overall, except for those companies who were operating in the space. I think what's also key to point out is that this was a study done by the OECD and the World Bank, which we as Labour don't necessarily use as a case in point to what they say, because they're usually quite conservative in the analysis. But if the World Bank and the OECD are telling us that we're actually conservative and that we could actually have the potential for job creation, then we should be looking quite seriously in terms of introspect. Concentrated markets can have significant negative economic impacts, which we can see in South Africa. You have high prices, low growth, it can also stunt innovation and investment. It's also associated with high levels of inequality, all of which we see in our country today. High levels of market concentration can also impact negatively on economic inclusion, and we thus welcome the amendments in the bill, because the bill is actually trying to address this quite succinctly. I know there was a submission made by the CCRED, who said that South Africa has high levels of concentration and market power, and the concern which is seen both in national and international spaces, and the apartheid legacy has basically entrenched this, and we've continued to do this currently. So if we want to be able to change this, in terms of what the CCR is saying, they say that there are reasons to believe that the barriers to entry are high and super competitive, and South Africa lacks the opportunity for people to be able to engage or to be competitive compared to other countries. So there's certain legislation in South Africa that's more restrictive. This includes the small businesses of the domestic market, the distance from which industrial economy is, from where the import and export sources are, and our skewed economic structure. And obviously this is historical because it emerges from our apartheid state, but we haven't been able to address this. So South African firms are not only anti-competitive, but the occurrence of this conduct is high and long-lasting comparatively. So when you look at South Africa and you compare, firstly, the way in which our economy is structured, where businesses are located, and how anti-competitive they are, or how exclusionary they are, vis-a-vis other companies compared to the rest of the world, we find that South African companies are way more anti-competitive. So we therefore recognize the fact that the bill recognizes this and is also trying to address it, and we therefore fully support these amendments in the bill to address that. The bill also fosters competition between firms, and the forms of competition is good because it leads to dynamism, strength in the economy. It promotes productivity, improves investing in upgrading of infrastructure, operation and maintenance, It also improves production capabilities so that we can win market share in terms of supporting innovation. And it also allows for new participants to bring different products, services, and business models to the market. This means that market entry for black entrepreneurs, SMMEs, and the historically disadvantaged can now be facilitated through the bill. In South Africa, the profile of ownership and control is also critical for improved outcomes. The market inquiry provisions are particularly important here. And in other countries, provisions within the market inquiry have been used to improve the way in which markets work, and therefore this is without necessarily being anti-competitive. So in some instances, business, for example, would argue that they don't support market entry because it is anti-competitive, and we'd like to indicate that in actual fact it's not. If it's used properly as a tool, it can actually facilitate it. In terms of exclusionary abuse of dominance in market inquiry, the section on the market inquiry provision speaks to some of the key challenges and proposes market entry as a tool to address the issue of market concentration, as well as the push for economic equity and fair labor practices, and therefore we support it. It also advocates for the Commission to be able to undertake inquiries into the sector to determine concentration in the market, as well as market prices and the conduct of firms, in order to address or facilitate economic inclusion, mitigate the adverse impacts of competition through divestiture or other remedies. While the bill also refers to the Act and clearly stipulates how this will be undertaken, following the rule of law, again, which reiterates the point that it won't be anti-competitive. A key aspect which would need to be reviewed would be in terms of the historically disadvantaged groups and workers, and one has to take consideration of these groups quite concertedly. We also have to ensure that workers are not purposely disadvantaged through limited employment opportunities or competition. So in terms of this particular aspect of the bill, Naledi welcomes the amendment, but we also support the CCRED proposal, which says that in actual fact, if you apply and you look more creatively at what the actual marketing inquiry process can actually do, you'd be able to use it to its fullest and achieve a lot more. And there's examples, I won't cite them because they're in the presentation, but they make reference to SAA, Telkom, there's also ArcelorMittal, and in these particular instances, they actually show how productive or how constructively you can actually use market inquiry to actually have a much more positive impact. And then I think there's also two or three other other cases that they cite. So I'm not going to cite them, but just to say that we support the CCR submission, but also agree that that while the current amendments are welcome, it is conservative in its ambition in comparison to the jurisdictions facing similar challenges, and it will not fully address the status quo, especially around tackling strategic barriers to entry in concentrated markets. We also support the need for definition of exclusionary abuse as per international best practice and the identification of examples of the types of conduct which in effect can be mutually reinforcing, which will ensure a greater onus on the dominant firm in terms of its special obligations to compete on merit. We therefore propose that a list of, and again supporting the CCRED's submission, we support the request for a list of factors to be considered when weighing up the evidence similar to those which were in the mergers with the cited. In terms of excessive pricing, the amendments in the bill shift the burden of proof to the respondent, removing the requirement to show detriment to the consumer, and calls for the Commission to issue guidelines that are most welcome. These are most welcome, and they definitely improve the aspect of enforcement in this particular area. However, again, to cite the CCRED and also to support them, the removal of the requirement to show detriment to consumers is also important to address pricing by vertically integrated firms that are able to shift profits upstream and where the consumers are affected other than business, where the consumers that are affected as well as other businesses that are affected are also taken into consideration. So this was initially removed, but we support that it should actually still remain and be taken into consideration. In addition, on the issue of price discrimination amendments, these are substantial amendments in the bill, and we welcome this on the issue, particularly on the issue of evidentiary burden. We know that businesses are arguing that this is not possible, but we'd like to submit that it is possible, and that, again, we're making reference to the World Bank report. They've been able to undertake research and prove that this is actually something that you can do. It must be done, and South African businesses must do exactly the same. And similarly, with regard to the burden of proof, the onus is on the business. It can be done, so we don't support the fact that business is saying it can't be done. There's sufficient evidence out there, and therefore we support the bill and fully endorse this section. On the issue of exemptions and advisory opinion, Naledi supports the amendments and states for the record that this is not an attack on big business, but these provisions are in fact in the interest of big business as well, and we trust that they see the merit and also support the amendments. On the issue of market inquiry per se, we'd like to reiterate that these provisions are critical and that the extensive powers granted to the Competition Commission to analyze the markets and effective remedies remedies that change the market outcomes are commendable. So we're really happy for that. We do not agree that this is beyond the mandate of the Commission, since markets are neither neutral or fair and are intrinsically shaped by past interventions and inherent positions. Investments and innovations of lead firms in the sector, and therefore there needs to be regulation, and the Commission is very well placed to be able to fulfill that responsibility or role. It is also important to note that international practice shows that competition authorities are very effective when vested with the power, when they are vested with the necessary powers to be able to do enforcement and are able to successfully implement structural remedies following a market inquiry where needed, and therefore we quite confident in the Competition Commission's abilities to do that. South Africa is merely following best practice, and we fully endorse this approach. It must be noted that, however, that market inquiries can be initiated, plays a critical role, and that resources, expertise, capacity for the Commission to undertake these inquiries are critical. So while it doesn't help if a bill empowers the Commission to do certain things, but you don't give them the necessary mechanisms and resources to be able to do it, so we feel that the bill needs to be something that actually facilitates that particular process, because it doesn't help if you say, okay, you can do this, but you don't arm them with the necessary. Furthermore, market inquiry must not be seen as simply as a tool to protect certain competitors, but it should be used to be more inclusive and reduce barriers, particularly for black and historically disadvantaged groups. This is vital to creating a vibrant and a dynamic market. In addition, the current structure of ownership and control is extremely unequal, and the level of exclusion is not sustainable. As such, the inquiry measures are the tool for remediation, our long-term overdue, noting our market structure, and once again, be supported. Finally, to ensure that the initiation of market inquiries are genuinely responsive to wider competition concerns and that they are focused on competition issues, these are some of the key things that must be borne in mind. This is what a market inquiry must do. The inquiry needs to be driven by predominantly the concerns of SMMEs and entrepreneurs from poor and historically disadvantaged groups. If market inquiries are to serve the interests of the dominant firms, then it won't achieve its objective. In terms of collusion and penalties, there's two amendments which affect the collusion provision of the Act. First, the penalty may now be imposed for horizontal restrictive practices which substantially prevent, lessen competition, but which are not price fixing, market division, or bid rigging. That is that they fall under Section 4.1a. Secondly, is the addition of the dividing market by allocating market shares to, and that's under Section 4b.1. This draws on the learnings from recent cases. These are both welcomed amendments given the extent of the collusion uncovered and the likely use of different strategies of firms to collude in ways which will be more difficult to identify. So we therefore endorse, and this is specifically being drawn from the CCRED submission. We agree with them, and we would like to endorse this particular point. We also agree with the CCRED that the proposed amendments to Section 10CB, including entry, participation in expansion of small, medium businesses and firms owned and controlled by historically disadvantaged persons, and important consideration in granting exemptions is given. Indeed, an exemption can be applied for in the circumstances described in paragraph 57. However, the provisions relating to prohibited horizontal practice could enable greater certainty. For example, a group of small suppliers who cooperate in order to compete more effectively with larger incumbents should not be treated as hardcore cartels, where they account for a very small share of the market and are lowering costs and prices. Similarly, cooperative or collaborative arrangements to build skills and technological capabilities must be distinguished. So while in terms of the bill, sometimes you can be wanting to address one particular issue, but if you're not careful, you might see something. It might have some of the symptoms, but in actual fact, it might be implementing it for a very positive outcome. But if you don't use the right criteria to address it, you could be undermining the very positive things that one, that the companies are trying to achieve. Furthermore, Naledi, like Kosati and others, would like to welcome the removal of the yellow card provision. We further welcome with great relief and accomplishment the additional amendments which we view as more decisive and definite in the public interest, since it advocates for the penalties to be commensurate to the offence, transgression, or the transgression, and is further strengthened by holding all parties partaking in the misdemeanor to be culpable. We believe that this is truly in the public interest, and that cartel is guilty of price fixing, for example, of bread, cereals, vegetables, and even the rand-dollar exchange rate, as we recently saw, actually brought to book. This is definitely serving the public interest, as well as the poor, as well as and historically disadvantaged, and will allow for greater economic inclusivity, particularly for entrepreneurs. On the issues of mergers and acquisitions, the amendment bill introduces a new provision, which is Section 18A on intervention in merger proceedings involving foreign acquiring firms. The provision gives the President power to constitute a committee, which must be responsible for considering whether the implementation of a merger involving a foreign acquiring firm may have an adverse effect on national security in the interest of the public. Naledi agrees with the concerns raised by the Helen Susan Foundation and noting that it could lend itself to abuse needs careful deliberation. Naledi, however, in principle agrees that the President has the power to intervene. Furthermore, we advocate that the bill be used to also include reviewing the impact beyond the borders of South Africa. So in the Walmart case, Walmart being a case in point, so Walmart has merged with Game. In terms of SADC, when other countries in Africa, people still see Walmart as Game as opposed to being Walmart. So we need to be quite clear. Just to give a little clarity, when there was a submission made by the Helen Susan Foundation on this particular issue, there was an ambiguous meaning of this particular section. So we're just saying because people can interpret it ambiguously in terms of what it means when the president has or doesn't have powers, etc., that we just need to look specifically at the wording because it could be misinterpreted. Furthermore, the bill now takes the consumer welfare and the consequences for workers into consideration. This is hugely appreciated, and for labour, it's a major step forward. For too long, workers have been the ones to bear the brunt of mergers through retrenchments, downward variation of working standards, and high levels of job insecurity. Moreover, once a merger has gone through the opportunity for recourse was lost, but the bill is now starting to address that issue and is indicating that should there be negative implications after the merger, one can actually undo it, so that's positive. We also applaud these amendments, and they are certainly well-received and in keeping with the intentions of the bill. This further emphasizes the need for national interest to be secured, thus making the national government at the center of these transactions, which we also support. On the issue of institutional provisions, the Competition Appeals Court will now allow for the minister to make representation, and since the minister represents public interest, the voice of the marginalized, such as workers on the poor and historically disadvantaged, we're very supportive of this, we endorse it, and we now know that the voices of those who were previously voices will now be heard. And the same applies to the issue of black-owned SMMEs, and therefore we are fully supportive as Naledi and Labour to this amendment. In conclusion, we believe that the bill is looking for radical transformation in the economy by addressing the institutional as well as structural inequalities of the South African economy, which was entrenched by apartheid, and which the current legislative framework has failed to reconfigure or to address. The high levels of market concentration, collusion, and inappropriate conduct on the part of South African firms had been under the Act received a smack on the wrist. So historically, when there was contravention, they basically just received a smack on the wrist without actually being given the commensurate punishment. This bill, however, truly seeks to alter this landscape in the interest of workers, the marginalized, and historically disadvantaged, and we strongly believe should be enacted in law. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Naledi, for the presentation. It was a long presentation, but you were able to summarize in a few minutes. I'll give opportunity to members to ask questions. And take us on our Makoe and on our Kebe. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for Naledi's work on this matter. It is appreciated, all the information that you're providing. My first, because you've not numbered your pages, I think it's page 3 where you say the amendments will have teeth. My question there is, are you therefore saying that Naledi, after you have looked at this, have nothing to add to the draft bill that is before us? That's point one, Chair. My point two relates to that in the sense that there are certain words that are being used where we find that other presentations made to us would argue about the words. If I can use the one example of national interest. Is Naledi okay to say to us that the way in which that is formulated in the legislation does not need any further amendment to it? My next question, Chair, is related to the powers of the minister, where the National Assembly has been dealing with the question of the regulations versus guidelines. Can you tell us how does Naledi look at that? Should the minister be providing guidelines or regulations? Thank you, Chair.
There seems to be a suggestion that the responsibility and power given to the minister to intervene will amount to interference in the market. What is Naledi's view? Secondly, Naledi seems to be supporting COSATU dismissing the issue that if we tighten the regulatory framework to insulate against over-concentration and abuse of the economy by big supranational corporations. We are effectively scaring away the FDIs, foreign direct investment. And COSATU and Naledi seems to be saying that is not true. But you're not coming explicit about what is the view from your side, that foreign direct investments are critical for the industry, for the country, so that they stimulate growth. But can you really not maintain a delicate balance between state security versus the foreign direct investment flows in the country? The last one, Chair, through your permission, if there are any lessons from the Walmart judgment, other than that the minister has a responsibility, or rather say the state has the responsibility to intervene on issues of national importance such as unemployment. Are there any lessons other than that? If you could raise them, please share with the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Not. If you can please respond.
So just on the issue of the amendments will give the Commission teeth, do we not have anything to add? I think in the specific overall submission, there are sections where we do say what we think need to be improved. So, I mean, I can tease that out more specifically if you need outside of that. But I think what the essence would be, you can have a lovely piece of legislation, but if you don't have the necessary mechanisms, for example, to facilitate that particular process, then it won't happen. And I think that for me would be the overarching. I think in terms of the specific amendments, I have made reference to it in the bill, but generally I think from where the Act historically used to be to where it is now, and I think the point that the Chair raised earlier is that they might, depending on what, because we're not working in a neutral environment, you can't go for the highest point. So I think what we're trying to do is, because it's an instrumental but a really positive form of legislation, we'd like to see, these are some of the key things that we would like to see. So I think it's not a perfect bill in its current form. Obviously, we would want something much stronger. But currently, in terms of where we've been to where we are, and also this is also a negotiated process, there's been battles, win a trade-off, which Naledi can also be a part of. But in terms of what currently has culminated into, for the moment, we're quite happy for it to go forward. Then in terms of like certain words being used, in, like for example the issue of national interest, should it be formulated, should it be reviewed? I think it's difficult because again I think a lot of that contestation happened at NEDLAC, which we were not party to, but CASATU was. And one would assume that if through the submissions and through the deliberations, if there's a common understanding and a footnote of what those specific terms which happen to have ambiguous meanings mean, and there's a common understanding between the various stakeholders in terms of through the process of social dialogue, then we would be happy with that. In terms of the powers of the minister, in terms of the National Assembly, in terms of regulations and guidelines, I think generally the minister should be responsible both for the regulations but also for the guidelines, because they go hand in hand. I think the key question would then be who would regulate, because you can't have the person who's giving the regulations and the guidelines also be doing the oversight, because sometimes then there's some kind of contestation. For example, we had that issue in the Department of Water Affairs where you become the referee and the player. So depending on the spaces and the and what the roles and responsibilities are of the minister, one would need to tease that out slightly. So, but I do think that the issues of regulation and guidelines sit within the ambit of the minister.
To clarify that point, that the original bill talked about guidelines,
okay.
And then the portfolio committee says that no, it should not be guidelines, it should be regulation. Regulations are binding,
sure.
But guidelines are not.
Sure.
So it is in that context that this question
that.
Is. But some are contesting.
Sure.
They want those guidelines to the original bill to remain as it is. So they are opposed to the changes by the portfolio committee. So that question is that
is
in that context.
So we would support the regulation. I think it's actually a guideline, as you said, it's simply a guideline. If you don't have enforcing mechanisms, it has no teeth. So there needs to be regulation. It's not necessarily that the regulator needs to be within the minister, but you have to have an external, you have to have a regulator either way, regardless of who's regulating or providing who's devising the regulations or the guidelines. So you need a regulator, but you definitely need regulation. One of the, I'm not sure who's the counter. The key is as a proviso, you shouldn't have regulations for the sake of regulations, because sometimes you can have regulations that are cumbersome, right? So then it doesn't allow, for example, in terms of the Competition Commission or the Minister, it can actually be constraining as opposed to facilitating. So I think one has to be quite clear on what those regulations are, and I think there's a lot of best practice examples of what works. In terms of the power of the Minister and in terms of the interference of the market in that business, I'm not surprised, and obviously from Labour we would disagree. Regulations, so if, on the issue of FDI, so I just want to, I think it's important that we put the something very clearly on the table. There's no evidence ever in research that shows that foreign direct investment leads to growth. In fact, foreign direct investment leads to high levels of underdevelopment and employment. South Africa is part of the African continent, which has been raped historically, and is continuing to be raped on a day-to-day basis of our resources. If you talk about foreign direct investment, the underpinning of that is called illicit financial flows. There's tons of research, including by the Department of Trade and Industry, that speaks to how South Africa is losing in the trillions money through illicit financial flows. So that's your foreign direct investment. There's no recipe for foreign direct investment leading to development, because the people who are investing are not interested in the development of our country. They're not interested in employment, and they're not interested in a competition bill, because the competition bill will actually regulate what it is that they're doing. So foreign direct investment, if we cannot determine the terms and conditions, and we cannot stipulate how FDI works for us, then it is not in our interest. So therefore, if it actually restricts them from a labor perspective, we'd be absolutely happy. I think when you look at this, it doesn't mean to say that you don't need foreign direct investment to stimulate your country. It has to be, it's how you negotiate it. But in the current form in which FDI is taking place throughout the world, it is not leading to development, and it's leading to underdevelopment. In terms of the Walmart judgment, I'm not particularly fair with it, but I would like to have the opportunity, seeing that you're in the process of deliberations, to go and investigate and then give you the written feedback on that one.
Thank you very much for the responses. I was just looking at this question on the
on the regulations. It specifically says the minister. The amendment, I think it's clause 4, section 5 of the Principal Act, is hereby amended by the addition after subsection 3 of the following subsection. The minister must make regulations in terms of section 78 regarding the application of this section. So it is specific that it is the minister. But I think somewhere in the bill itself, just as I can find, I think it's in the principal act, I think somewhere in the amended bill, it talks about the process of developing those regulations, that they should also be consultation and input by stakeholders. So I'm sure you'll be available to make your input in the regulation of I don't know if there are any follow-up questions.
No, do we come?
No, I'll be sorry. Any follow-up questions? No. Let me take this opportunity to thank you. Thank you for coming earlier than the original session. We nearly had the crisis, otherwise we're going to wait for you. Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we should now break for lunch. I thought that Sato would be here by this time, otherwise we're going to have a working lunch. Now that Sato is not yet arrived, I would suggest that we break for lunch. If possible, let's say here before 1:30 one, I prefer that we should start at 1:30 instead of having the 1 hour lunch. Agreed? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So let's break for lunch. Thank you very much. Oh,